Hello and welcome to The Big Fight. It's been a week where we have seen a lot of anger, a lot of anguish, a lot of sorrow, and a lot of people talking at great length about what should be done to deal with the situation when it comes to terrorism, and specifically what should be done with Pakistan. And after the Uri attack, there's clearly been a lot of anger in India. Now, on this episode of The Big Fight, we're going to try and get away from some of the shouting and the screaming and the noise that you may have been encountering, and also from some of the emotions, and to actually sit and, in a somewhat calculated manner, try and get experts to analyze for us a range of the different options that India has got when dealing with Pakistan. And there are, at the end of the day, a range of options. Going to war is one of them, attacking Pakistan, but there are a range of other options as well. And we're going to try and look at them step by step, item by item, and see which of them, what are the pros, what are the cons, and what can actually be done. So hopefully, at the end of this 1 hour, all of us are slightly better informed as to all the options that are actually available right now for the government to consider. And a great set of panelists who are going to be joining us to take us through all of this. Right here in the studio, we have Sambit Patra, BJP spokesperson. Manish Shankar Iyer is with us, but not in his capacity as a Congress leader, but as an Indian, former Indian diplomat, and as somebody who's frequently been called a peacenik when it comes to Pakistan. So we'll be getting your views on all of that. Retired Air Chief Marshal of the Air Force, Fali Major, is with us, who's going to give us some of the defense perspective. Rajiv Dogra, somebody else who was Consul General to Karachi, as was Manish Shankar Iyer, and will tell us how, you know, maybe we should play the Pakistan issue. Colonel Ajay Shukla, defense analyst, has also been talking of various options over this week on many talk shows, so it's good to get you on. Sunil Alag is joining us, who can talk about some of the economic aspects of what we are talking about, and we'll be getting him in a couple of minutes. We're going to be going across to Islamabad to speak to Lieutenant Colonel Shafkat Saeed, who's a defense analyst. And one other special guest joining us from Afghanistan, Amrullah Saleh, the former chief of the National Directorate of Security, has very strong views on the subject. In fact, it is reported that the ISI once considered him the most dangerous enemy that they actually had in Afghanistan. So it's always a pleasure and a privilege to be speaking to him. Thank you all so much for being with us. Let me just start off by putting the range of options that actually do exist, and perhaps we can look at each of them in place. One is what has been spoken about at great length in TV studios, and if you go by what's being said in television studios, we've already declared war on Pakistan, and the only question is to figure out which cities should be bombed and how, and what specifically should be done. So option number one is the direct military attacks in one form or the other. Just go in and attack Pakistan, blow up terrorist training camps, blow up Pakistan, you know, military action. That's option number one. Option number two, which the government has already said it is doing, is isolate Pakistan diplomatically and ratchet up the diplomatic pressure. And Pakistan in many ways seems to be helping India in that, because if you hear the speeches, for example, from Nawaz Sharif, where he's calling a self-proclaimed Hizbul Mujahideen terrorist a youth leader, he seems to be doing part of India's work for it. Now that's option number two. Option number three is covert military action. Don't do it directly, but find some ways of making certainly the terrorist leaders pay. Why is Hafiz Saeed and Masood Azhar running around freely? Look at what has happened elsewhere. So that's another option. Then we have economic measures. And that is something perhaps which we haven't thought enough about or discussed enough, because there are a measured number of economic measures that can be used in Pakistan. And finally, I guess we can come back to what has often happened in the past and could happen again, is just talk and saying this is terrible and we're going to do kadi ninda to everything that's happened and, you know, move on in life. So the do-nothing option or the talk-a-lot option is always out there as well. Well, let's just start off, if we can, with the very first option, and I want to get everyone's take on it, the possibility of direct attacks and military action. And Sambit, I want to get you in on this, because actually the government has almost painted itself into a bit of a political corner, and all week long, some of the BJP's strongest supporters have also been the strongest critics of this government, and Narendra Modi in particular. Is there political pressure now on this government to take the first route for no other reason, perhaps A, to teach Pakistan a lesson, but also because politically it's the only option?
No, I would say on a serious issue, as dealing with Pakistan, saying that political option or political pressure is the reason as to why the government would act would be
public
quite puerile.
Okay, not political pressure, yes. Public pressure, public opinion, all of those things.
I would define that. To say that there was a political pressure, certain speeches of yesteryears were run over the television, and that's the reason as to why a structure of action against Pakistan would be taken by the government would be too pluralistic, in fact, and quite churlish. I would not deal with that. But coming to the important issue of as far as the public sentiment is concerned, well, yes, in any democratic country, public sentiment does perform an important job, and the government has to respect the public sentiment. Prime Minister has taken a very serious note of whatever has happened in Uri, and he was the first to respond by saying that the perpetrators would not go unpunished. So I believe we have to take the Prime Minister very seriously. Things are being worked out, but I'll just take 10 more seconds. Look, as far as the options are concerned, there has to be either a covert option or an overt operation. If it is a covert option, no sensible person, we have great experts over here, no sensible person would say that, well, we have to discuss and we have to declare the covert operation.
Naturally not.
Otherwise,
naturally
not.
So when we come to that option,
And if it's an overt one, I'm sure you would understand that the timetables are not declared, even if it's overt operations.
But we still don't know what the Prime Minister is doing. The Prime Minister said they'd be made to pay, but it's not very clear how, what, where, when.
It should not be. It's an option which has been left to the army.
And correctly, you should wait for the appropriate time. So that point is also well taken. Manishankar Iyer, before I move on, you clearly in the past have very frequently said, you know, we should not be doing any adventurism, should not be attacking Pakistan. What is your take now?
Gandhiji said that if you start taking an eye for an eye, it'll leave the entire world blind. And therefore, if we take the attitude that if they take a tooth, we're going to take a jaw, it would mean that we would have to become 32 times as much a terrorist state as Pakistan is. If I find that among the suggestions that are made, there is something that we can make Pakistan pay without paying a huge price ourselves, I'm willing to consider it. But as of now, I would rule out both overt as well as covert action, because while retaliation on our side is possible, right, Escalation is not in our hands. And given the uncertainties and instability in Pakistan,
but by that logic, you can do nothing because you're scared of escalation. I'm not saying that you should go in and bomb Pakistan, but if you're saying no action can be taken because there could be an escalation, it pretty much means you're condemning yourself to say, we'll sit back and take it no matter what keeps happening.
Unless there is another option. It's what you called do nothing option. I said do the only sensible thing option is how I would name it. But you're the one who began by saying you want to take up option by option. But as of now, my position is right, that neither covert nor overt action is the right action. We should base ourselves on the philosophy of Mahatma Gandhi.
Okay, Mahatma Gandhi. I'm just going to come back to all of you. I just want to, while I do have Amrullah Saleh now joining us. Amrullah Saleh, thank you so much for joining us. Now, we saw something remarkable this week, and many people have wondered in the past why India and Afghanistan have not actually come together and spoken in a word. When it comes to diplomatic pressure on Pakistan, the fact that Afghanistan has said, let's jointly boycott SAARC, maybe get Bangladesh in as well. And we had a very strong speech delivered by the Afghan delegate at the United Nations General Assembly. Do you think Afghanistan and India are now going to really join hands in a far more direct manner and a far more blunt manner in isolating and cornering Pakistan?
Well, salam and hi to you. I'm not sure Pakistan is going to be hurt if Afghanistan and India were to boycott the SAARC summit. I'm not sure Pakistan will get hurt if they face some degree of regional isolation. Because when they attack India and when they attack Afghanistan, they have in their calculation the type of conventional reaction and the type of conventional response they are used to getting from us. And to this date, our response has been, in my opinion, below our weight, below the weight of two countries, and we have not shown them our real strength. What in this case is very important to do is to create an international response to Pakistan's behavior in the region. Regional response by itself will not be enough. So my opinion is time has come that we should do more coordination between the two nations, two governments. We are getting hurt on daily basis. India gets attacked once in a while, but the atrocities that Pakistan-sponsored terrorist groups do in Afghanistan is now a matter of daily life for us.
Right. If Abdullah Saleh, if I could just ask you, I said there are a range of options, you know, direct military attacks, diplomatic pressure, covert action, economic measures, talking and trying to, you know, mend their behavior, which is sometimes called the do-nothing option. Of these, which do you think is the best?
This is not a matter of best or worst. We are in an era, everybody acknowledged that Pakistan is sponsoring terror. So what we need to do is we need to coordinate our response and see what has to be done in order to target. Okay. Target means has a wide range of meaning. Those who are sponsoring terror, both in your style and my style.
Just wanted to ask you before you leave us, you know, Pakistan, again, we heard Nawaz Sharif standing there at the United Nations General Assembly and saying, we have nothing to do with it. We are, in fact, the principal victim of terror. And, you know, while he was saying it, I was wondering how is he possibly saying that with a straight face, you know, externally sponsored terrorism, and we're just a victim. We have nothing to do with it. You witnessed some of that denial yourself, haven't you, Amrullah Saleh, when you went and met General Musharraf and you pointed out that Osama bin Laden was hiding in Pakistan. And from some stories, he banged on the table and he asked you, do I look as if I'm the president of banana? You know, you might want to share that story with us if it's true.
The narrative of Pakistan Prime Minister Mr. Sharif is not taking off. He cannot convince anyone. And again, my last word is, it will be extremely difficult for us, the political class, to tell our people, you know, we have to have more patience. This is just 2016, and Pakistan has been doing it since its creation. I don't think our public will also buy our narrative that the moral high ground is the solution. They want some type of reciprocity.
All right, Amrullah Saleh, thank you so much for joining us from Afghanistan. Lieutenant Colonel Shafkat Saeed, Thank you for joining us. You know, it's been a week with lots of heat and lots of dust. But, you know, I have to ask you, Lieutenant Colonel Saeed, you're hearing the statements coming out of India. You're hearing the statements coming out of Afghanistan, the statements coming out of across the world. Your prime minister has been there in the United Nations General Assembly asking country after country to listen to them. And everyone is saying the same thing. You can't go on using terror as an instrument of state policy. At some point, surely that realization has to dawn on Pakistan. And all we can hope is that realization dawns before something is done to make that perception change.
I think your political maneuvering by Prime Minister Narendra Modi sahab and the media effort, which I call war hysteria, being hyped up, this all is to melt down Pakistani resolve on Kashmir.
Pakistan is melting on its own and one way or the other, but in what way is the killing of 18 Indian soldiers...
I'm not in for slinging and for tit for tat...
No, I'm just asking you a question. You said political maneuvering. 18 soldiers being killed. How is
that
political maneuvering? 18 soldiers were killed from people who came from Pakistan. How is that political maneuvering?
Modi sahab in August referred to Balochistan and he said that there is gross human rights violations in Balochistan and in Sindh,
but there are
in Fatah, right?
There are,
and this was all to cover up the shameful failure in handling of Kashmir and the spinning out of Kashmir out of Indian hand. And you have not been able, you have no solution, military or political, for
can
the
I can I just intervene for a second? Kashmir
this
hasn't spilled out of India's
day.
Hands in 70 years. They're not going to spill out of India's hands later. But I'm just asking you specifically: 18 soldiers being killed. How is that political maneuvering?
And 104 civilians have been killed.
The 18 soldiers who were killed by people who came from Pakistan, how is that political maneuvering?
Which include minors.
Sorry?
And as young as 5-year-old kids have been blinded.
Well, let's not go into what happens. You know, we'll get into Balochistan, we'll get into that. I'm asking you, let's just stick to the question which is at hand right now. in Uri, there was an attack. 18 soldiers were killed by people who came from Pakistan. Does Pakistan not have a responsibility to take ownership for what? And they are done by people whom you give shelter to. You give allow you allow Hafiz Saeed and Masood Azhar and others to run around. Do you have no responsibility to control them?
There are few things which make you conclude that they were from Pakistan. You say that they had food prepared in some sweet house in Karachi, United Sweet House in Karachi. Then you say that they had guns which bore Pakistani marks on. And you say that the ammunition was made of PF war. And then you say that they had ID card of Lashkar-e-Jaish-e-Mohammed.
Are you trying to say that they are not terrorists coming out of Pakistan? There's not a single person in the world, sir, who doesn't believe that terrorists come from Pakistan.
Please listen to me. You know, I can only participate Vikram, or I can make an argument the way you listen to Amrullah Saleh Saab, exactly like that. I want you to listen to me so that I can voice my opinion.
Speaking against India, let me just come in for a while.
No, but then don't call me if I'm not making sense.
No, sir, I'm asking you to answer a specific question.
No, you can't stand truth.
Okay, I'm asking you a
simple
question.
You the reason for that. I'm saying that Uri operation, you said, what do you think that a man, normal man, goes for burglary into a house, he wears gloves and he hides his face. And Pakistan would send people with ID card and PF marking on their weapon?
No, okay. Can I
and
ask
the,
you?
The most comic fact that you brought in was that the people from Bawalpur had plans written in Pashto. For God's sake, even nowadays, Pathan can't read Pashto. Yeah, and you expect people from Bawalpur to read Pashto?
Samit Patra has a question for you. Samit Patra has a question for you.
What are you talking about? Your story of Uri does not have head and tail.
Will you please stop the ceasefire? First and foremost, I don't understand as to why we should be expending our energy, our well-earned energy, on a person who won't understand. Nawaz Sharif is not understanding. Do you think Mr. Safkat Saeed is going to understand? They're not going to understand. They are people who are permanently in denial mood. Do you believe that the Pakistani agent is going to come over here on an Indian television and say that, well, yes, we are the ones who sent you terrorism? One of the most furious terrorists of all time was found in Abbottabad. Is it a fairy tale?
Okay, so
is it Alice in Wonderland? It is something which is evident. It is true. Hafiz Saeed's speech.
It is
a fairy tale.
Oh, hang on. So you are saying Osama bin Laden was not found in Pakistan?
Food from United. I give you the reason for that.
I have to get this. So can I just understand from you? Like you are saying that the terrorists did not come from Pakistan into Uri, or no terrorists come from Pakistan, Osama bin Laden was not found in Pakistan. Is that what you're saying?
I have few confusions about this thing. There are two confusions, but just two confusions.
There's a whole lot of confusions, sir. Not just international two confusions.
Was Osama bin Laden found in Pakistan or no?
When the whole world could see Gaddafi being killed and Saddam being hanged, why Osama bin Laden has not been shown being killed?
Okay, fine. So Osama bin Laden was not found.
Why do we have
the Americans have lied to us.
You can't stand truth.
Okay, it's not true. All right, sir. I know we are about to lose our line to Pakistan.
Fateh, because he's plays music to your ears. You can't stand me because I show you mirror.
No, like the mirror you're showing us is that Osama bin Laden was not found in Pakistan.
There is nothing called as a mirror in Pakistan, sir.
The Afghans are lying, the Indians are lying, the Americans are lying.
Then you would have been the first one to realize what you are saying. But no. In fact,
does Hafiz Saeed live in Pakistan or does he not live in Pakistan?
My simple question to Mr. Safkat Saeed is, only a few days ago,
does Hafiz Saeed live in Pakistan?
Mr. Nawaz Sharif almost read out from the dictation that was given by Hafiz Saeed. Hafiz Saeed, in fact, was glorifying this terrorist called Zuran Wani. And the same thing.
Sambit, I'm just trying to establish that Hafiz Saeed is a
terrorist. Do you think you'll inquire and he would pick a gift to you?
Sir, is Hafiz Saeed in Pakistan right now, yes or no?
No, he would have confusion regarding that as well.
Is Hafiz Saeed in Pakistan? Hafiz Saeed, is he in Pakistan right now?
Yeah, he's in Pakistan, yes.
Okay, so fine, we've established that. I'm so happy to hear that. All right. Thank you, sir.
Once your minister had come for a meeting, he was protesting outside the conference hall.
He wasn't a minister, actually.
So that is called as mainstreaming of terrorism, sir. Thanks. You have proved today in the debate.
All right, fine.
That's what Pakistan is up to.
Can we just move on? I know we...
Burhan Wani is a terrorist to you and he's a martyr to us.
Okay.
Exactly like that. Akbar Bukhti is a terrorist to us and he's martyr to you.
The fact that your prime minister would sit and say he's a youth leader and in a peaceful movement when he himself has been filmed with the guns... And he himself, in his own speeches, is saying that there should be a caliphate in New York.
The nature of Pakistan-India relation is such that your terrorist is our martyr and our martyr is your terrorist.
My God.
All right, fine.
This is the only nature of
the only slight difference is that India's definition in this case is actually accepted by 95% of the world. So that's the one point which you might want to keep in mind. But
yes,
anyway,
because,
sir, this slanging match can continue forever. I don't think we're going to be able to convince each other.
India.
So let's just drop it
because
for the moment.
Because they find more naked people in India. They find more demand in India. That is the only reason. We
right.
are population.
I don't think we are getting anywhere. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for joining
Bye.
Us. Let me just get back to the discussion. Did you know Osama bin Laden was not actually found in Pakistan?
Everybody in Pakistan knows that.
Huh?
Everybody in Pakistan knows that.
But you did admit that Hafiz Saeed was found
no,
in Pakistan.
No, there's a complete self-delusion and there's a whole world that has been painted to Pakistan by its military, by the establishment, by the government. And everybody firmly believes that Pakistan is this country that is suffering at the hands of terrorism, that is the world's greatest sufferer of terrorism, and also that the rest of the world is somehow ganging up on Pakistan. And this is all just part of that.
Yeah. All right. So let me come back now to the theme that we were discussing, which was where we had started, the first of the options where we were before we went abroad, which is the military action. Now, I just wanted to ask you, military action, is that something that you think is feasible, doable? How would you rate that?
Absolutely doable, without any
doubt.
Without
escalation? But then the big concern is that what happens.
Let's go step by step. When you talk of military action, it depends what kind of military action you're talking about. Are you talking about a full-scale war? Now that's a different ballgame altogether. If you're talking of a terror response as one of the options, which should... You know, many people talk of terror camps. I don't believe in the terror camps because there's nothing like a terror camp. I'll go back a few years, and this is from actual experience I'm telling you. We had some intelligence about these so-called terror camps. And somehow or the other, the information went out that we know. And the next day, when the same thing was found, it was full of school children. Yeah. Now, just imagine if you had struck that place. It would have resulted in something very different and very detrimental to us. So what I'm saying is the armed forces today, I'm not current for the past 7-8 years about their actual state, but I'm absolutely confident that all three services of the armed forces are ready for any kind of option.
Okay,
that is
but you're
military
saying,
option
so,
that
so,
is required.
So hang on. Would you agree with that? That even if there is to be any military action, and I'm not saying that should be the correct solution because there is the possibility of escalation that was spoken about earlier. But the blowing up of terror camps, there's a risk in that.
Just remember, and a lot of people forget this, that India has the fourth biggest army in the world and Pakistan has the 11th biggest army in the world, according to Credit Suisse. So we are not talking about a situation in which, let's say, America operates, which is a situation of total asymmetry, where they can basically do what they like, or a situation in which Israel operates where it can do what it likes without serious retaliation. In India, in our borders with Pakistan, on the line of control particularly, for a great many operations, when you act, retaliation is certain. And this level of asymmetry that exists between India and Pakistan is not that much. It only kicks in when you go into the realm of full-scale war. The difference. So what I'm saying is that if you, let's say, attack with artillery a Pakistani post, they have the capacity and the capability to hit one of your posts with artillery. Then you escalate, you do a raid across the border. They have the capability to do a raid. When you keep escalating the confrontation, a certain point comes in close to full-scale war or into the realm of full-scale war, where India's economic might, size, and capability kicks in and makes us win.
But at that point is when the nukes come into court.
That point is something that we need to consider very carefully about whether we go there.
Yeah. I need to add something here. You know, even if there is a punitive strike, if it is considered tomorrow, don't forget one thing, that when that is considered, the escalation ladder is also considered as to what would be the repercussions if you launch a strike.
Yes.
And till such time you have that ready, you will not launch that strike.
Okay.
So that should be understood.
Fair enough. Can I just ask you, whatever the nature of a direct military attack is, you have to see what it is. I mean, just blowing up a empty so-called terror camp, which has got nothing in it, or even worse, it's a trap where you might end up finding children were there, and it was a Pakistani trap that was laid for us.
you've got to be careful about that, because that can destroy all of India's hard gain, you know, hard-earned gain so far.
Absolutely. Let me give you a couple of examples which prove and disprove the point we're talking about. 1971, the situation was much worse. US and China were not particularly friendly towards India and could have pitched in with actual material support. Indira Gandhi went in and did whatever was done by India. Operation Parakram, we were supposed to have the advantage of surprise. Yet, our men were posted, entire force, might of Indian Army was posted at the border. We looked at the border throughout the summer, then retreated back after suffering about 500 odd dead. Public pressure, that's the second issue which is crept in. There was public pressure in 1965 because Mr. Shastri was considered a mild man. He did not want to extend the fighting in JNK to the international border. Fortunately, Pakistan took the first step. But 1 lakh people marched to Parliament in New Delhi asking Shastri to cross the international border and head Pakistan. Second, public pressure. Kandahar was public pressure which went horribly wrong.
But the question of public pressure, I'm glad you referred to Kandahar, because yes, there was public pressure that led to the hostages being released. And
including
that same
Masood Azhar.
And that same man who was released under public pressure in 2000 and in 1999 at that time, eventually became the person, Masood Azhar, who's behind whatever happened.
Just let me add one thing about public pressure. Public pressure will never waver a military decision from the military leadership.
Yeah.
What I mean to say by public pressure is, well, yes, since in a democracy, the public sentiment, not the pressure, the sentiment has to be respected, whatever you do.
It was another NDA government which did bow to public sentiment. And I remember public sentiment. There were people marching. The families of the people who were there inside IC-814 were marching on the streets and were saying, you do whatever it does, release, have our people released. Bowing to that public sentiment, Masood Azhar was released. And that is, in a sense, I'm not saying it's directly, but in a sense, Jaish-e-Mohammed has come as a result of that. And whatever happened in Uri, 18 soldiers have died. It is in some way linked to that decision that was taken.
No, I would
then
say that was living to democracy. It was not just the public pressure in the all-party meeting. All the political parties also had put
but
pressure
I'm saying
on the
so,
NDA.
It was
so a decision.
Public sentiment can sometimes lead a government into the wrong direction.
No. I see 200 people on board the plane would have lost their lives. Then probably today you would have been questioning me other way.
How many people have lost their lives since because of Masood Azhar?
No, I understand, sir. Let me also remind you, in 2008, out of a goodwill gesture, Saeed Lateef was released, who was the mastermind of the Pathankot attack. It was just a goodwill gesture, remember. There was no public pressure also.
I also think that there's a false equivalence here. The Kandahar hijacking thing was just a question, a minor question of exchanging three or four militants with the release of hostages. Going into an escalatory spiral that could lead to war between India and Pakistan is of an entirely different order of magnitude, and public pressure should not have a role in deciding whether we go
to war. It has to be taken as a government decision. When you're talking about military and military strikes and military action, the other possibility, obviously, with cannot be discussed in television studios, and I understand it, is covert action, including against the leaders of the terror groups. And let me sort of go in reverse direction and end up with Sunni Lalak, because at the end of the day, many people say, oh, look at what Israel did after Munich. At the end of the day, what Munich resulted in is that the leaders of the terrorist groups, when the government said the perpetrators of Uri will be punished, the actual perpetrators are dead, the terrorists who came in. What you're talking about punishing are the people who sent them.
Covert action actually greatly expands the menu of options available to a government. The problem is we have not done that. We have covert action capability we did have, we closed down at the time of Mr. Inder Kumar Gujral. So you really...
Gujral was in 1997 when he closed it down. From 1997 to 2016 has been 19 years.
19 years.
And in those 19 years, it's not that India does not have the capacity or the capability to take covert action, including if you use elements within Pakistan.
You don't even have to send Indians. You tell me, if India had the capability to knock off Dawood Ibrahim, would we not have done it by now?
Actually, the answer to that, we can't discuss it entirely in television screen,
but it's also a question of political will to do it. I'm glad that we don't know. What
we don't know why it's not being done, but I'm saying it's not necessarily because you don't have the capability.
Absolutely.
So just on this particular aspect, is that a better route to take, thinking about covert action?
Firstly, every government in the world, every strong government in the world, whether it is US or Russia or Israel, as you mentioned, Saudi Arabia included, takes covert action. So it is time. I mean, after all, Defense Minister of India has been referring to kanta se kanta nikalenge. What is that? That is referring to covert action.
If you had the strength, what is it that the Americans are doing? They are finding the guys who are the heads of various terror organizations and are using drones to blow them up. Unlike in our case, we're not able to do it.
Drones are very, I mean, it's become a very fanciful word to use against a country or a group of people who do not have any air power with them. I would love to see drones flying over India because they'll be shot down like ninepins.
And unfortunately, the same might be the case in Pakistan.
Exactly.
I mean, there are other methods that can
there
be
are plenty of methods which you can't discuss.
Okay, there are plenty of methods. Manish Shankar Iyer, I mean, the possibility of covert action, is that something that would worry you as well?
Well, the kind of covert action that's being hinted at is that we assassinate either Masood Azhar or Hafiz Saeed or both. I'm saying that they killed Osama bin Laden, and the Al-Qaeda today is stronger than it ever was. There is no guarantee.
ISIL has taken over from Al-Qaeda.
And the weakening, and I hope you let me finish my sentence, and the weakening of the ISIS now is leading to the strengthening of the Al-Qaeda. Now, I believe that if you took out Masood Azhar and you took out Hafiz Saeed, you would not be taking out the Lashkar-e-Toyba or the Jaish-e-Mohammed. And therefore, this may give you some temporary satisfaction, but it is not going to end the problem. That is much more fundamental.
Yes,
I don't know whether in the course of this program where you've given Mr. Saleh all the time you want because he agrees with you and cut into
I
this.
I have a view of the I find your attitude,
frankly, repulsive. I want you to give other people don't agree with you an opportunity to speak without interruption.
Why have I come to you and asked you for your opinion? What do you mean repulsive?
When the minute you ask me for my opinion and I start giving it,
and you interrupt. I'm interrupting everybody.
Why can't you let me finish what I'm saying?
But I did allow you to finish what you're saying, and please carry on if you have something more to say. I don't understand why you're getting into personal attacks. If you have a view to express, please express your view. I'm not stopping you from expressing it.
Yeah, please don't interrupt it.
I did not interrupt you. You finished your comment.
Screw it. Pass it on to Sambit.
Don't be annoyed, sir.
I am annoyed. Let me finish what I have to say and I hope I can finish my sentence without being interrupted. The attempt to get one or two individuals will not resolve the issue because the organizations they have set up and the people they have motivated and mobilized will continue to be in existence. There will be a successor to Hafiz Saeed. There will be a successor to Masood Azhar. In the meanwhile, we would have painted ourselves into a corner as those resorting to assassination in retaliation for terrorism. Thank you.
By the way, you did finish saying that earlier, and I did allow you to finish saying almost exactly the same thing 2 minutes ago.
Just to add to that, Pakistan also has the capability to retaliate in India to the targeted killings of Hafiz Saeed and Masood Azhar, and we really don't want to...
With targeted assassination on this side of the border.
Exactly.
All right, fine.
Without going into what the government is going to do, what is a covert operation, we have experts commenting on that. Just because even if we finish Osama bin Laden, the Satan in this world is not over, so we should not finish Osama bin Laden. Even if we finish Hafiz Saeed, the organization that he belongs to will still exist. That means we should not point fingers towards Hafiz Saeed in a way which acts against him. I believe is cowardice. And for God's sake, India should not be a country which just surrenders on the knees and says, kill us, because either you will retaliate or we will not be able to finish your organization. Okay. So we are ready to die.
Samit, before I'm accused of being repulsive again, I'm going to ask Manish Shankar Iyer to explain exactly what is his desired solution. We've had a range of solutions. I'm sure he has a solution as well. We're going to ask him to explain it in just a couple of minutes. But before that, let me come across to one of the other possibilities that I was talking about. And one of the things that is being spoken about this week is Why can there not be economic measures? For example, India's been maybe pressing the rest of the world to have economic sanctions on Pakistan, but the rest of the world does it or doesn't do it. At least a couple of people whom I've spoken to have suggested, why doesn't India say it? Like, the major investments in Pakistan are coming from Chinese companies right now. And if India was to come out with something that says, for example, companies that have major investments in Pakistan have to go through A, B, or C, and there will be sanctions or whatever, that hits the Pakistani economy and it hits them where it really hurts, without doing targeted assassinations or military action. What's your view on economic measures against Pakistan?
There is no one action which can be taken. So you need, we are talking about either going to war or having covert and overt and whatever. You have to do a little bit of a mix. The economic point of view which I'm talking about is that, yes, you can try and get the world opinion against Pakistan. It's worked on Iran when everybody else decided to do it. But let's assume that you decide to say, all right, the Chinese people are there. That's one aspect. And if we turn around and say, look, any Chinese people who do not do it there, we're not going to allow Chinese imports. You have to begin to hurt economically the countries that are supporting Pakistan, which we are not even thinking about. China is becoming more and more dependent. Today, they've set up a large manufacturing base. If America decides not to bring in Chinese imports, Chinese get hurt. India is a very big market for them. They are bringing it in. You've got a pressure point. I'm not saying that's the only answer. Your answer is no, get the whole world to give Pakistan economic sanctions. That's going to take a very long time. Hurt them. There are every single Pakistani general, I can tell you, has got some business interests almost all over the world. Why are you not hitting out at their business interests? We are not using our economic might that we have either on China or Pakistan, because getting the whole world, they will want to see. I don't want Iran and Pakistan to get together. So therefore, and I am all for covert action. It does not mean that everything that happens in Pakistan, you can blame India. I don't know why everybody thinks about covert is one Indian going in and shooting the guy. You have to make, like the Mossad, they make you pay. So every guy who stands up and does something gets shot. Whether that organization might take a long time, but economic sanctions, there are millions of ways.
We heard you.
Expose all the corruption in Pakistan to the world.
The possibility of economic sanctions?
We don't have the capacity. Indo-Pak trade, direct trade, is only $2 billion. That's peanuts for India and for Pakistan. As far as China is concerned, China's trade with India is virtually nothing compared to China's trade, for example, with America.
I'm agreeing with you. I don't think you can have sanctions on China, but you can, for example, say there will be red tape for companies that have invested heavily
but
in Pakistan
China
because you want
India
to check
for
their
future.
China is looking at India for its future now. Because we need them. We can at least do something of a minimal order. Pakistan, since 1996, has not given us the MFN status. Why can't we withdraw that MFN status?
Fine, that's one suggestion that's come. Mani Shankaraya.
In 1949, September, the Indian rupee was devalued vis-a-vis the dollar, along with the pound sterling. The Pakistanis refused to devalue the Pakistani rupee accordingly. At that time, 90% of Pakistan's trade was with India. We stopped all trade with them, and within a few years, Pakistan had overtaken us in their rate of growth and were described by the EKFA report of 1965 as the second most industrialized country in Asia after Japan. So therefore, we have imposed sanctions on them, but it didn't work. Today, our trade with them directly, which is recorded, is a few couple of billion dollars. But there's a huge amount of trade that takes place via Dubai. Are you going to bring the UAE on your side and say that they will prevent imports from India via to Pakistan via Dubai? There are many routes by which this can be avoided. Now, in America can sanction Iran, but for us to have these illusions that we will be able to bring Pakistan to its knees by imposing sanctions on them is the kind of delusional attitude towards India-Pakistan relations.
So now, at the risk,
also the important point that for each bale of trade that is blocked going from India to Pakistan, for each trader that is hurt in Pakistan, there's also a trader hurt in India. So just let's remember that about sanctions.
Okay, now we're starting to run out of time, but can I just, Manish, if I can just ask you, so if you have said in very vociferously that the military actions, covert options, economic measures, these are not what should be done. So out of curiosity, what is it that you think should be done to Pakistan?
For some reason, you didn't bring up the diplomatic sanctions.
Okay.
On the 20th of September, the Secretary of State of the United States met with Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif. The Prime Minister has joined the Secretary of State to express great concern over the Uri Army base attack and the need for all sides to reduce tensions. Now, if this is the attitude of the United States, and it will be the attitude of all the Western countries, for us to imagine that we will be able to gather world public opinion in such a way that there is such pressure on Pakistan that Pakistan goes down on its knees is, I think, being delusional.
Okay. So diplomatic pressure, is that the solution?
I would rather say it's better to be delusional than to be surrendering. Secondly, he spoke about America. Only about a few days ago, one of the senators of America, who was in fact chairing the subcommittee for terrorism, has introduced a bill that let's declare Pakistan as a terror state. Secondly, we see for the first time two nations on board the SAARC are ready to boycott the SAARC in the name of Pakistan. So there's a lot of optimism
in
there.
Diplomatic option, is that going to work?
Many of options that you've read out together should work slowly over a period of time. Diplomatic option in immediate terms, something like SAARC, right? The SAARC countries minus Pakistan put up a united front.
Oh, we seem to be behaving as if this whole thing has just become a question. The Uri attack was not the start of terrorism. Mani is absolutely right. The United States is hand in glove with Pakistan, and that's for one reason. Pakistan has created stakes with the United States. Pakistan can switch off supplies to Afghanistan. Pakistan has a handle on the Haqqani network. Pakistan has a leverage with the United States. We have no leverage with Pakistan. The fact of the matter is it's been conclusively established, Vikram, over the past two decades. The world will pay lip service to terrorism emanating from Pakistan, but will not take any hard action.
Okay, fine. So if that's where we are, what is your solution?
Between 2003 and 2007, we made enormous progress not only in reconciling the Kashmiris, including the dissident elements, to this acute relationship with India, but we also succeeded in working out with Pakistan a near agreement. That's how you
talk
sort
to Pakistan. Is,
enough
that's
time
the
has
solution.
Been given
talk
to
Pakistan.
My opponent now. I should speak something. Let me categorically say no option was never the option of Mahatma Gandhi. Mahatma Gandhi was for.
I never said no option.
Sir,
I said.
Can I complete? I was not.
Please don't.
Sir,
don't
shout and heckle me over
please
here.
Please do not.
First
please
and foremost,
do not.
First and foremost,
please
let's
do not
behave.
Misinterrupt
let's
me.
Behave as panelists.
I did
who
not
are
say no
to
action.
Each other.
I gave you the action
well,
to be taken.
Well, if I read wrongly, excuse me, but that's what I read. Number one, if he says that that option is not the one, and I'm misreading Mahatma Gandhi, let me tell you, Mahatma Gandhi said, try and try, never say die, but in a non-violent way. We are discussing something very different today, where violence is not to be seen in the perspective that Mahatma Gandhi saw. We are discussing about military option. That means we should disband military altogether. Number two, when you say we have to pick up from where they left when they were in governance,
okay.
Because he was quoting 2004 to 2014, how did we not pick up from there? We picked them exactly from there in the sense that when Mr. Modi was to be sworn in, Mr. Nawaz Sharif was called as a guest. Mr. Modi even visited his house when his birthday was, I believe, during some ceremony in his house. That means enough leverage was given to Pakistan. We want to talk. We want to talk terror. We want to solve the issues. But
okay.
If you continually stab us on our back, then we are not going to do what Mr.
Okay.
Manishankaran is suggesting.
Let me just get final thoughts from everybody, starting with you.
I agree absolutely. I don't know who said that, but it has to be a multi-grained approach. A bit from here, a bit from there, and it cannot be declared out here in the public. We have to have faith on the representatives who we ourselves elected. Secondly, political intention of the government has to be in the right direction, and I'm sure with the right direction that this government has, we are surely going to win.
All right, let me get final thoughts from you.
I would suggest that the present is the appropriate moment for us to have talks to determine mutually the conditions on which substantive matters will be broached.
Okay.
If we don't do that, I'm afraid we will continue begging Shombit's pardon to have the delusion that there is either a military option available or a diplomatic option that will give us success. Success will only come by our being able to talk to the Pakistanis.
Okay. Fali Major.
All I can say is it needs a whole of government approach to handle any such crisis that we are facing today. We have the third largest Air Force, the Army, the fourth largest air force and the seventh largest navy, and they're standing armed forces. They're not reserve forces. So what we need to know is that we have the military capability.
Capability for what? To fight Pakistan, defeat Pakistan
in the war? Of course. Without any doubts.
All right. Sunil Alag, final quick thoughts from you.
This toothless talk has to stop. We have to show some teeth. There has to be some covert action where India doesn't come into the picture. There has to be action on China, and nobody, you cannot expect China overnight. You have to hurt them. You have to hurt the Pakistani generals where they've got business interests. Use your intelligence, expose them, and get going through a number of small things.
Okay.
Just toothless talk will not get us anywhere. And Gandhi never ever said, have toothless talk.
Okay, right. Final thoughts from you.
Will Pakistan change its behavior? I doubt it. So that means that there will be blood spilled every few months or every few weeks as it is happening now. So do we exercise that menu for options from now onwards, tomorrow or day after, or after the next big strike? Because then the danger is there might be knee-jerk reaction. And that is an eventuality we must avoid.
Final thoughts from you, Anush.
Pakistan is a state that is deeply committed to the use of terrorism in pursuit of its state aims, and we are not going to be able to change that. America has failed to change that. We are not going to succeed after that. What we can change, and that is what we need to focus on, and that has not been in our menu of options at all, is to resolve the problem of Kashmir by direct talks with the people of Kashmir. That is Pakistan's only real pressure point against India. If we can do that, and that is within our capabilities and within our own actions, we will have defanged Pakistan.
And that, by the way, is one of the options that we should have exercised when there's a periods of peace. And that is something that we have actually let slip. Not just now, we've let that slip time after time through our history. Whenever things are quiet in Jammu and Kashmir, when it's a time when we can actually get a long-term settlement,
we miss it
because we think the issue is over and then it flares up again. So, right, that's one of the things that we need to do. But that is an internal thing for India to sort out. How you deal with Pakistan is, of course, an open-ended question. Lots of options have been discussed, some perhaps more sensible than others. But let's wait and see what actually happens. And frankly, it's not easy to find an answer for how to deal with Pakistan, because I think a large number of countries are trying to figure out exactly that question. I don't think they have the answers. I don't think America completely knows how to handle Pakistan. Afghanistan certainly doesn't know how to handle Pakistan. And India is still trying to figure out what the appropriate answer is. That's a big fight right now. We'll be back again next week. Thanks for watching. Bye for now.